It's the show Agent Orange / Adolf Twitler would love to shut down.
So here's the story, folks. I am the least black person that you've ever seen in your entire life. In fact, we did very well relative to racist people.
It's the no bullshit zone.
It's called fake news.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
I know who you are. Just wait.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network, where the future is so nuclear, we are wearing eye protection today. Up on this weekend review, me and Chris Bass will, well, just cover a lot of stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and bring him in because this is a week that is unlike most others. So, legendary voice and, of course, now, legendary instructor, Information Headquarters himself. Please welcome Chris Bass.
You have overcome, for I am here. Shaggy, how you doing? Thank you always for the great accolades. The same to you, my friend, that we talked about before about loving this business, loving in radio. So, I mean, you have the exact same passion I do. So the feeling is more than mutual.
Well, I'm going to tell you, today is going to be one of those shows where we're going to have to, like, try to keep the love, man. Try to keep the love, because our first story today is about trash talker in chief, Donald Trump. Chris, this week, for a guy that's had a lot, and I do mean a lot of photos taken with him, Donald Trump picked a very strange target to go after in Al Sharpton, among other people, huh?
Well, you know, I think what Trump tries to do, I think he tries to out people who he believes, you know, turned on him or want to call him out for who they, quote unquote, really are. So he went after MSNBC's Reverend Al Sharpton, saying that he's a con man and he's not to be trusted and things along those lines. It's kind of funny to me because when the president goes after people, it's kind of like he's describing himself from where I look at. But he went after Reverend Al Sharpton and saying that they used to be close back in the day, and Reverend Al would come over to him and ask him, could he come over to his events, and it would mean a lot to him. And here's the thing about what Trump says. I believe him. And I believe it because back in the day, like in the 80s and 90s in particular, Trump was a celebrity among celebrities. He really was. You know, the Trump Tower and everything else before he became president, he was hobnobbing with celebrities of the day. So it wouldn't be too far from the truth to say that those celebrities back in the day used to hang out with him. I mentioned before on various shows, a comedian, Sinbad, had mentioned in an interview here in Chicago that he used to, like other supporters and other entertainers, used to hang out with Trump. He would accommodate you at his hotels. He would make sure you were taken care of. And a good person until he ran for the presidency. And so, as Sinbad said, I have no idea who this person is, meaning Trump.
Yeah, because when it comes to Donald Trump, it seems like he doesn't have any idea who the people are that he's coming after this week. Now, Al Sharpton was one of the more interesting targets. One, because, let's just go ahead and face back, Al Sharpton is everybody's target. He kind of puts himself out there as the living bullseye. But
yes,
one of the other ones who does not put himself out as a living bullseye, not since the time that he went across the bridge and got his ass beat, is Elijah Cumming. Now, this is one of the things that I have got to bring up that is just a little disturbing. Chris, Donald Trump talked a lot of trash about Elijah Cummings this week, and when asked, now here's the crazy thing, when asked later on by CNN reporters out on the White House lawn, is there a strategy to this, these systematic attacks against the four minority women in the squad, and now Elijah Cummings, a black man who runs one of the Senate subcommittees that's been throwing a lot of subpoenas towards the White House, is there a strategy? Donald Trump said, no, there is no strategy. And Chris, do you want to know what that makes me think?
How does it make you think, Shaggy?
That makes me think that, you know, contrary to a lot of the GOP that goes, there's a strategy behind this. Even in some of the African-American supporters that Donald Trump paraded out this week, some of them actually were quoted, and I'm paraphrasing here, well, good thing he went after some black people because black people are afraid to be gone after. But
yeah.
Make of that statement what you will. But the thing that came out is Donald Trump says he had no strategy. So guess what that means? He's just racist.
Yes.
I mean,
first and foremost,
if there is no strategy against coming out against the squad, against coming out with, you know, all the insults on Al Sharpton and Elijah Cummings, that basically means you're just a plain old everyday racist. Am I wrong there?
No, you got it completely correct. And see, before all this started to come down the pike, a few of us who were against Donald Trump running for the presidency, and we saw all these type of behavior patterns before the presidency, we realized then that he was not good for the country. And now we realize that it became, when, you know, when he actually won the election and was you know, about to head office, a lot of us in a certain camp and a certain, you know, percentage was saying, this can't be good, and it's not going to be good. So when he got ensconced in power, and we see the trail from when he started to where he is now, you cannot deny the obvious. You can't deny the 900-pound gorilla in the room, which is Donald Trump being a racist person. And it's just that simple. And again, if you are a person in the GOP, in the Republican Party, if you are silent, you're co-signing on a behavior pattern. And I understand about power and privilege, about Republicans being in a position of power. I get all that. But there has to be, and obviously some Republicans who do not co-sign with that behavior pattern. They just don't. You know, you just know people who are conservative, very nice people, you know, as far as the standpoint of, don't go by the standpoint of putting somebody in the broad brush and, you know, put them in a category. They're people just like anybody else. It's just that ideology is different from, say, you being a Democrat or a liberal, excuse me, or somebody in the middle. But that being said, you have a president who represents your party, and how do you feel about that? So because you're quiet, you're just as guilty as he is, as far as I'm concerned.
That's what a lot of people have brought up, that silence is publicity. And this is the thing. One of the people that keeps bringing that interesting point up since pretty much the inauguration has been Elijah Cummings.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, Chris, this is the thing that I really do not understand about this whole debate, because this is upside down, bizarro world. We are in the upside down, just like in Stranger Things. Because Donald Trump says that Elijah Cummings is so racist and Al Sharpton is so racist towards him that it doesn't matter what he does towards them. Am I missing something here?
Well, I think, again, the president has an ability to call out so-called call out people, but in reality, he's calling out himself. Calling somebody who's racist and you're racist doesn't make any sense. Now, mind you, he don't think he's racist. We all know that he is. That the point of finger saying you're racist and you're racist, I mean, come on now. It's got to a point where we are in this world, Shaggy, where he is beyond dangerous. That type of rhetoric would get people killed. I'm not wishing people death. What I'm saying is, when you get that type of rhetoric out there, you have the highest land in the office, and people respond to that. They respond to it in different ways. You have people respond to it a certain way on this side of the spectrum, and then on the other side of the spectrum, it could be something altogether different and dangerous. And when you continue to say things like, you know, saying that you live in, you know, the worst crime, you know, in Baltimore, rat and rodent infested. Well, I thought it was kind of funny because his his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has property in Baltimore.
That's gotta hurt.
Yeah. So not only are you going after these so-called people to make enemies, you're going after your own family. Once you break down the statistics and what it is, he has dilapidated apartment buildings, been fined by the city many times for various things, depending on the apartment itself. So, once again, he does not think. He just attacks. It doesn't matter who gets in the way. And Elijah Cummings, say what you want, who was the head of the House Oversight and Reform Committee, for me, is one of the most, you know, and he has so much integrity and morals, Elijah Cummings does. You cannot, no matter what side of the aisle you belong to, you have to respect that. And obviously, you know, Trump doesn't respect anybody.
No, no, because if it comes to people that you should respect in the House, Elijah Cummings has literally put his life on the line for making sure that a lot of Americans have the ability to vote. And voter registration is something that is fair and adequate, even if it's in a rural district. Elijah Cummings has put himself out there time and time and time again for decades as far as I want to do what's right for the American people. Now, when you have that kind of a reputation that's decades entrenched in D.C., and it comes against this, let's say, Cummings is the immovable object, and this irresistible force of Twitter and bad skincare, Donald Trump, comes up against you. I guess we really have to ask, is this going to be a competition of who flinches first?
I would have to say yes. And we have gotten to the point in our country where bad taste, racism is becoming status quo. And that is dangerous. Again, I use this word throughout the whole time we get together, Reggie. I'm talking about Shaggy. If I'm going to call you Reggie, remind me of somebody named Reggie, so excuse me. I don't like it when we're looking at going backwards in time. And that's bothersome for me. And when you're dealing with that type of going back in time capsule, you would think that we would know by now that we would get to a point of progression. But when you have someone, again, who flames the fans of racism, it is more than disturbing. And that bothers me because you hear about, they'll get into further in the program, about like McCarthyism and these types of dog whistle mentalities from your parents, your grandparents, and people in your family. And they want you, in that generation, not to go through that. You know, they took a lot to make sure that your life would not be as harmful, as, again, dangerous, so that way you have a better life because of the sacrifices they made. Now we're seeing this come to fruition again, and that's not good for anybody involved.
No, because here's the thing. As long as we're talking about going back in time, let's start our trip back in time and go back to the 1920s and 30s, where one senior Trump was arrested and spotted multiple times at nationalist and KKK meetings. So here's the thing. When Donald Trump came out and said, and I quote, "There's not a racist bone in my body," although I know from an anatomical and scientific point, he's correct. There's not a racist bone in anybody's body. Har, har, har. Isn't science fun? But when he said that, you kind of have to say, but racist behavior is in your DNA. Am I missing something here with that assumption?
No, you're not. And we have to call it for what it is. We cannot so-called dance around it. We can't ignore it, and it is what it is. We have a president in office who is racist. Before, when he was coding the whole thing, for example, let's go back to Charlottesville, Virginia, when there was quote-unquote wrong on both sides, and the people who committed these crimes were decent people. Okay, that's coding. That's hiding behind. So now it's no more coding. The gloves are off. Here it is what it is. And you have to acknowledge it for what it is. We have to fight back against it in any way, shape, or form. It's... You cannot use rhetoric like that in the office. Unfortunately, he's doing that. What if you're someone coming up in, you know, say, a younger person these days, and remember back in the day when they say you could be anything. You could be an astronaut, you could be a lawyer, a doctor, the president, and ever. And you're seeing this behavior of this president. What does that mean for the future? Hell, what does that mean for 2020? Because we've seen other politicians gravitate towards what he's doing, whether it's Mitch McConnell or anybody else, they co-sign. Why? Because now it's popular to be visceral, to be vile, and to disrespect people no matter who they are.
Now, that's just it, because this behavior at a federal level actually does have some very big state consequences for me out here in Hawaii, because as everybody knows, we are going through a major dispute between a sacred place to the indigenous Hawaiian nation and a private corporation and a state that is hungry for money, just trying to take the land any way they can. This week, we've noticed something in the newspapers and the press that seems to be born of the Trumpian error, and that is articles in the paper that kind of dog whistle a little bit about the protectors for the white Hawaii community. And I'm going to just kind of paraphrase what they said here. Chris, they called the protectors of Mauna Kea a quote-unquote colorful group who are disruptive and intimidating. Now, if you're listening to that on the mainland, you automatically recognize it as, oh, this is Donald Trump dog whistling. Here in Hawaii, where it's never existed before, there has been this whole debate for the last 3 days. Has Donald Trump's influence finally hit our shores? And now we're going to dog whistle against minorities that we have a problem with.
You know, I would have to say yes, and it was probably only a matter of time. And so, again, when you set the tempo and the pageantry, quote-unquote, for the country, when you are in charge, you are the one that goes out on faith, goes out on the party, for example, but it should be for all Americans, all citizens in this country. When you set the tone and tempo for that, they gravitate towards that. If he can do it, I could do it. It's like, now I got a license to be mean. It was just a matter of time, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hate to say that you're right, but you are right. And as long as we're talking about issues that have been rooted in the past and really deep rooted, America has always kind of had this, dare I say, natural paranoia against communists. That was a big thing. We had a whole frigid war over it. Well, this is the thing, Chris. As of lately, the echoes of the past, not just in the machinations of Vladimir Putin and Russian international diplomacy, specifically when it comes to the United States. Seriously, that could be its own show. We'll move on from that. Back to the domestic side of it, though. Here lately, lawmakers are kind of seeming more and more okay with the idea of Russia meddling in our politics. Specifically, one guy who has been called the linchpin, the biggest block in the block of the Senate, Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell has of lately, especially through AOC, has been called basically Russian sympathizer. And Chris, I don't think she's that far off the mark, do you?
No, not at all. Again, what we're seeing, Shaggy, is a old playbook from the government. Let's go back to this whole thing, calling out AOC, saying a whole comparing her to McCarthyism. Now, I got this down. Let me make sure everybody understands the history of it. Now, McCarthyism was a campaign against alleged communists in the U.S. government and other institutions carried out under Senator Joseph McCarthy from 1950 to 1954. Many accused were blacklisted or lost their jobs. Yeah. And the now infamous Senate hearings that McCarthy had, were you or ever part of the Communist Party? That was always a direct question he would ask them. And you go back and watch it in black and white during that time in history. And a lot of people suffered from it. A lot of movie stars, a lot of people, you know, in various walks of life, no matter who they were called to task on their so-called communist beliefs. And so when you use these Gestapo tactics that McCarthy did back in the 1950s to bring it up through the guise of Senator, you know, Mitch McConnell, all you do is go back to the old playbook. And once again, you're talking about a playbook that should stay buried. Unfortunately, it's not buried. It's been unearthed.
Yeah, because here's the funny thing about this story. It actually has a direct tie to Donald Trump in the original Joseph McCarthy scandal. Now, of course, you mentioned that the big red scare of Hollywood during those days is when McCarthy went out and basically said, you're a communist. You can't prove it. You can't disprove it. So, you're a communist, and now you're blacklisted. I don't think that's really the way he talked.
No, I don't just say it's like those old 1930s and 40s gangster movies.
Right.
I would... right, come on here, Steve. Come on here. Now, come on now. That's right.
Yeah. Honey, I'm home. What's in the refrigerator? But
right. Exactly.
All laughing aside, Joseph McCarthy was a very, very horrible, horrible man who actually yes. ruined a lot of people's careers. And sometimes over just petty things like professional jealousy or envy, and especially when it came to young starlets of thinking, why, these uppity women are getting too many rights. So, I'm sure he didn't talk like that.
No, you're just channeling in 1950s racist people. That's all.
Yeah. Look, honey, the crowd is looking colorful.
Right. Hey, be careful. Be careful, honey. It's getting kind of dark outside.
Yeah. And it's only 4 p.m.
Right, exactly.
This is the thing. Joseph McCarthy, besides ruining a lot of people, had assistance in ruining people. One of those guys who learned a very ruinous way of doing law and used it to his advantage, not only for the benefit of everybody caught up in the Red Scare, at least he was on the bad guy's side this time with McCarthy. Not only did he learn that, he also learned to take advantage of New York's fragile real estate market all the way up through influential places like Studio 54 until he met a young client by the name of Donald J. Trump. I'm talking, of course, about Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn had a direct connection to Joseph McCarthy. So when AOC goes and says, Mitch McConnell, you know, you're basically a communist, and he approaches her with the, you're engaging in McCarthyism, wouldn't you think the president at this time would make a public statement seeing as how he knows the guy that helped invent the whole practice?
Well, yeah, you would think so, but I'm sure we'll hear from Trump in some way, shape, or form. It's funny you mentioned about Roy Cohn, who had aligned himself, like I said before, with Senator Joseph McCarthy during that time. If anybody was a walking hypocrite, it was Roy Cohn. He denounced homosexuality, was a homosexual. Denounced homosexuals with AIDS. He ended up having the HIV virus during this time. And mind you, when the HIV virus came out, it was quote-unquote the gay man's disease. We have an advanced technology and science yet, because we now understand where it comes from. But back then, it was a scare, because if you were homosexual, you got AIDS, and that's what would be a sentence of death. And also the rhetoric that came behind it. But a good thing we have advanced from that. But having said all that, Roy Cohn was just a walking hypocrite in his finest form. So again, having that history with people that Trump has, you would think that you would tread lightly, because it's not like nobody can go pull it up and find information nowadays. They can do it. But again, he just doesn't care. Mm-mm. He just doesn't care. So it doesn't matter who he's aligned with, as long as he says his piece through a statement that you see in the press, or he goes to, of course, Twitter.
Now, this is the thing. Strategy or not, because like I said, Donald Trump didn't have a strategy. Why should Ocasio-Cortez? Strategy or not, how odd is it in the year 2019? We're basically accusing the leader of the Senate of being a communist.
Again, we're living in strange days. You would think that if somebody was looking at this, that it has shades of, once again, back in the 1950s or even before that. And when we're making comparisons to the way things used to be, to the way things are resurfacing and embracing the past, and embracing racism out in the open, again, this is not the country that we should be living in. We should be so far advanced. Those type of days should be in the back of our rearview mirror, but unfortunately, it's coming close again. Remember, like, you know how you drive a car and you have that right mirror that says, you know, appears to be closer than certain objects would be?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on now in the country. These objects are getting so close, could be right behind us. Not just looking into it because they're closer, quote unquote, they're going to be closer for real.
Oh, you know, that's just it. Yeah. When we talk about things being close, like really, really close, the closeness of McCarthy's investigation and Mitch McConnell's behavior, what do you think? Is it there?
Well, yeah. When you use fear-mongering tactics like, now we have Mitch McConnell doing McCarthyism, and when you say things like, go back home, those are sensible from the standpoint of people saying it who are racist. Because to their minds, it makes sense to them. Regardless of who you are, now mind you, the so-called squad that they came up with, you had people who were born in this country and people became naturalized citizens. But you don't want to talk about that, go home. From the beginning of time itself, that's always been, no matter who you were, go back to Africa or go back to Ireland or go back wherever you come from. But again, it amazes me because, like I said from day one, if we really did that, everybody except for Native Americans have to leave this country. Everybody got to go.
Yeah, and according to my ancestry DNA, part of me would have to go to Africa, part of me would have to go to Europe. It would get really confusing for some of us. Chris, we have got to take a quick break, and I mean this. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about more trash talking in D.C. and, gosh, the week that was. It is the Week in Review here on the Shaggy Jenkins Show. We'll be right back.
Too much consumption of the Shaggy Jenkins Show could result in a higher IQ, a better understanding of the world, and not being called a f***ing idiot as much. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. Of course, if you missed any part of the beginning of our show, I'll tell you, go to the website, shaggyjenkins.com. Search for it wherever fine podcasting is served. Spotify, iHeart, what have you. We're everywhere, kid. We're everywhere. Just look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show. Joining me from the Windy City, who does not have one of those accents that screams popcorn and overt racism, please welcome back to the show, Information Headquarters, Chris Bass.
Thank you, Shaggy. You know, here at the Shaggy Jenkins Show, we cover all timelines, including 1930s and 50s rhetoric and dialect. Yeah, see? Thinking of big boss. See? Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I'd like to, like, take the rhetoric to a little bit more mellow of Northern California, because here's the thing. You gotta be stoned to not notice what the hell is going on between California and the federal government. Now, Chris, this year so far, they have over 40 different open litigation processes between the state of California, the largest economy in the United States, and the federal government. And two things this week happened that are very, very impactful. Now, the first I should throw out there has to do with the automotive industry and the Paris Accord. In case you didn't know, not too long ago, Donald Trump broke America away from the Paris Accords, which was, in the words of everybody that wants to live on planet Earth, effing stupid. For the rest of the world that still adhered to the Paris Accord, well, they made pleas to the United States of, hey, look, you know, there is this thing, and Republicans are kind of big on it, called state rights, the ability of a state to assert some sort of law that gives protections beyond the scope of the federal mandate. With that said, California passed a very stringent emissions clause. Now, this stringent emissions clause is higher than the current requirement by the U.S. EPA, which means that California is the only state with those rules in the United States. And this is very important, Chris, because here's what happened. Despite Donald Trump, pressure, despite Republicans' pressure, and even proclamations and the like towards the state of California to change this, California did not bend on their emissions law and the three major car manufacturers from the United States all signed an agreement to uphold their vehicle manufacturing to the California emission standard, not the federal one. And this did not go over well in the White House, as you can imagine.
No, I would say not.
No, no. But the second thing that happened this week with Donald Trump, because it's funny that he's already got this smack in the face from California. The second thing that happened is that California decided that they have had enough of this debate about tax record. And as such, to be a presidential candidate on the ballot, on a California state ballot, no matter what district you're in, you have to get approval by releasing publicly your tax record. Guess that doesn't sit well with Donald Trump either. Right, Chris?
No, no, of course not. Kudos to California Governor Gavin Newsom for signing the law this past Tuesday, requirement again, as you said, for candidates to release their tax returns in order to participate in the state's presidential primaries. Now, of course, you know, on Tuesday, the Trump campaign, people fired back saying the bill was declaring it was the law was unconstitutional. Well, yeah, of course not, because it affects you. You were the one, meaning Trump, the first in the history of people running for the presidency in this lane. Why will you not release your tax returns? Now, everybody can speculate and just state the obvious, but here the governor of California is making an advance statement to say, okay, even though he did that, this will never happen again in this state. So hopefully that can galvanize other states to do the exact same thing. Let's hope, because it's monumental. It's needed. I'm glad they're able to make it happen.
Well, it could actually bend some other state will, because as a part of California's economic dominance, it has a massive amount of interstate business, not just in agriculture, but in communications, and of course, commodity. So when it comes to California's position of being able to be the one door block to the whole GOP scheme, it seems that they're not being subtle. Why is it that California is just blatantly going after the one person that we're not mentioning in any of these laws, but we know who the hell these laws are about? Why do you think it is that they're going after him with such purpose?
Well, they have to, because I can't name anybody else that has denied their tax returns to be shown to be turned in. And again, we said the president's like this. Before this governor was able to sign into law, you might have other inspiring politicians who are running for offices and things like that, and say, well, you know what? I don't have to show you my tax returns either. So you get copycat mentalities because of what the president has done before he was president. And now he got the job, obviously. Some people sit back and say, well, if the president could do it, then so can I. In California, that puts the kibosh on it immediately. Like, no, no, no. You're going to follow this law, whether you like it or not. Give us your tax returns to be shown. And again, it sets more than the president's, because you can imagine what the other people are doing who are running for the presidency, running for state and local offices, who could pull the exact same, quote-unquote, Trump card and say, I cannot and will not show you my tax returns.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. California has had its, let's just say, fair share of corrupt politicians in their past. So a lot of people that are defending the California law say, this is not really about Donald Trump. Don't get me wrong. Donald Trump knocked a big hole in the election process that we are all witnessing at a federal level. But this whole kind of always existed in California. A couple of other people have exploited it in the past. So we're just going to tie that up right now since we're all talking about it. So a lot of people that are defending California's stance against Donald Trump are saying, hey, this is bigger than just, and I hate to say it like this, this is bigger than just the federal election problems that we have. This is electionees, or should I say candidates, being corruptible as well. If this law, and I mean this absolutely, if this law is allowed to stand because already Trump and his sycophants are going after it and trying to denigrate it on Twitter and social media and in the press. And of course, they're, oh, we're going to press lawsuits and stuff. And of course, we expect at least 2-3 lawsuits tops. This is the thing. If this California law sticks, Chris, could this force a federal mandate?
It may or it may not, depending on who's in control when you try to do the federal thing. So again, who's in power, position-wise on the other side of the aisle. If it's Republicans, what we already know is going to go, is going to be met with pushback. If you have Democrats who are in the majority of power, then you're going to have more of an acceptance of that type of stance. It's always a back and forth between both parties, and this is not just obviously the country that we live in, but it would just be nice one day, even though I think it would never happen, to see more bipartisanship, only because of the fact that America right now needs healing. And we have someone as a racist in Chile, said earlier in the conversation, who continues to divide. And once again, we don't need that. And I've always been fascinated with people who subscribe to Donald Trump's behavior pattern. I'll give you an example real quick. So my days back at WLS Radio here in Chicago, I was a talk show host. Mm-hmm. Over the time, you get a chance to, you know, meet people, whether you hear them on the call into your talk show or you meet them in person. So there was a guy, I won't mention his name, but he was a long listener to my show and other people's shows as well. Now, mind you, I was unique because I was not conservative. On a mostly conservative station, most talk radio stations are geared towards white conservative males from the onset of the audience. And yes, he's Caucasian, but I remember watching his Facebook page, became Facebook friends, and how he would say, you know, God bless the president, nothing wrong with that. But then there will be a story connected to it that has nothing to do with God, if you believe in God, or the blessing. It's just like a vile pattern of behavior of what this man is. So I don't know where people get their lines crossed. I don't know, maybe your definition of being a kind and blessful man is different from mine. When you, again, co-signing on a pattern of behavior that obviously is racist. Mm. And so it opens your eyes up to various people over the years that I've seen on social media where, yes, they were calling to my show and telling me their point of view, but to, again, fast forward to a president who is obviously wants to put the stranglehold on people of color, women, and the whole nine, and keep dividing us, and you are okay with that, that bothers me.
Mm. Yeah, because let's talk about this division. You know, besides the whole California thing, Donald Trump's actions have ramifications, big ramifications. And this week, some of those ramifications were taken out in a most unusual place. Now, when I talk about people doing overt signs of racial intimidation, you would probably think that I'm talking about some rural buck-toothed deputy out in the middle of some obscene county in some weird, obscure southern state. And you would be perfectly right to assume that because, unfortunately, that happens thousands upon thousands of times a day. Grow up with, seriously, America, we do this. But, you know, besides pointing out the blatant obvious, federal employees, though, usually, unless they work in one of these obscure, rural, backwards kind of districts, they hold themselves up to a little bit higher of a standard. And if I were to tell you that enforcement agents, and I throw the air quotes up there because that's kind of the deceiving part of this whole thing, enforcement agents were seen planting a noose, you would pretty much assume I meant some guy named Billy, and he is, well, 8th grade educated, but deputized. You would assume that, right?
Yes, you would.
But this happened at the TSA. Chris, what's up with the TSA and the KKK?
Well, there's a story that came out recently about 2 TSA officers who are now suspended temporarily for leaving nooses around the job area. When you see stories like this, you're dealing with, again, a learned behavior pattern. Nobody, obviously, you know, knows about nooses and what it means unless somebody's taught you that. unless somebody has shown you that there's obviously racial overtones to it. Again, when you're dealing with this happening in Miami, International Airport, you have, again, two TSA officers leaving nooses found in the baggage screening area, things like that. Once again, you have a president. I'm not blaming him for racism, because racism was way before he got there. But again, when you stoke the fans of fire of the whole thing and pretty much give a okay, I think, honestly, if you like your job, depending on your job, you wouldn't say or do anything to get fired upon suspension, unless you have some bravado or confidence to say, regardless of my job, I'm going to do some ignorant stuff anyway. And they might not seem as ignorant, but it is. And it's a danger. The fact of someone taking time out to create a noose in the first place and not knowing the historical ramifications behind it, case in point, in this country, not too far ago, people of color were seen, say, you know, you live in the South, and you look at a white person in the eye, which was a no-no, and you did that, and you could be strung up. You could be hanged right where you stand. It could be street poles. It could be trees. It could have been anything. The destruction of black people in this country, people of color, I know people don't want to talk about it. I know some people are like, la, 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 but no. You have to listen to it because it's the history. If people like these two TSA officers would not have done this, this conversation would not even be at all. But since you want to bring up the history of the whole thing and people getting hanged again for just being themselves, there are stories and pictures. You don't believe me, take my word for it. Go Google it. Of black women hanged and their bellies cut out because they were pregnant.
Yeah. And that's
the thing. It's sick. It's sick.
That sick behavior, though, is something that is epitomized and symbolized by a noose. That culture of violence has a badge, and that is a noose. So when TSA officers go leaving these around, they're not really trying to intimidate the rats and roaches with them, are they?
No, of course not. They're pretty much saying, I'm a racist and I'm okay.
And that's the problem. In our country, this day and age, our president makes it okay to say that.
Absolutely.
Well,
no question about it.
That's the thing, though, Chris, because as we get ready to transition to our last story of the day, I'm going to ask you one more thing about these TSA officers, because this isn't an isolated event. This has happened time and time again across the country and has been escalating as of late, specifically in the region of the United States where I'm sadly from. This is a kind of a disturbing trend. And a lot of people on the conservative side keep saying, no, this is not linked directly to Donald Trump, his behavior, his words, and his actions. This is just America righting the ship of going great again. And of course, these growing pains will disappear as soon as we're all calmed back down. Do you have anything you would like to say in rebuttal to that statement, Chris?
Sure. They're lying. They're lying through the conservative teeth. Why? Because what they've done is that they, in my opinion, have created the Donald Trump monster. So once again, I said before, I worked in talk radio at WLS here in Chicago for 15 years. And again, knowing how people respond to conservative values. So when you use code language like those people, and when you use code language like the urban area, and you know how they behave, so you have to repass that and realize what they were saying. So all the years, if you are a politician or a conservative talk show host, radio, TV, or the like, when you use code language like that, what you did was you created a Donald Trump in the future who just come out and says it. So you go past the line of the cold language, the dog whistling. He, meaning Trump, has surpassed all that and comes out and tell you just all out what's on his mind. And it's no more codes. It's the words that he uses.
Yeah, because as long as we're getting into the words that he used, not too long ago, he visited a place that I actually started in radio, Charlotte, North Carolina. Now, for those of you who have never met Charlotte, North Carolina, let me tell you, the Queen City is a lovely place, except if you're a sports fan. Well, if you're a sports fan that only likes cars that go in circles, Charlotte is amazing. Other sports, not so much over the last couple of years. But the thing is that Charlotte is a place that I am very intimately aware of the culture there. And I used to, no lie, back in the early 2000s, before September 11th happened, I used to enjoy tripping around the city and visiting the different, what we called little districts. You know, you had the little Latino district, you had the little Black community district, you had the little crackers from way up north with their weird food and accent district, you had the normal working, you get what I'm saying, right? It was right. It was a cornucopia of culture, Charlotte was. So the thing that is very painful is not too long ago, Donald Trump went to that town, he is going to that town, he went to Greensboro and started a rally. At that rally, there was a chant against Representative Omar saying, send her back, send her back. And they have been wrestling with the fallout of that for the longest time. Now, here's the thing. Charlotte, very diverse city. It enjoys its multiculturalism. Oh my God, do they enjoy multiculturalism in Charlotte, North Carolina? I know that is a ridiculous statement, but please, trust me, I live there. Okay. Okay, so the thing that really got them shaking in their boots is that Donald Trump has picked their fair city as a location that for his renomination ride. Chris, if you're the Queen City at this point, aren't you kind of thinking about pulling the blinds shut, turning off all the lights, and ignoring the knock at the door?
Oh, exactly. You know, the one thing you don't want to do is offend everybody or most people. And, you know, describing what you were saying, you know, of course, you have people with different walks of life, different idea patterns and what they believe in. But again, you know, you don't want the rallies or someone who, again, stirs racism and controversy to be a part of it. Who wants that? I mean, we've seen what he does at his Trump stomping grounds or, you know, when he rallies for, you know, for the campaign, when he says things about the squad going back. Or if it's Hillary Rodham Clinton, lock her up. As we've seen the body language, he'll step back from the podium and then let everybody say the rhetoric, lock her up, send them back. Mm-hmm. Because he embraces all that, because that's what he wants to hear. So which is why he steps back, let the audience say what they want to say, and then come back into it. But again, if you're going to host this, what's to say what can happen? I'm not wishing anything bad on Charlotte. But again, you're going to have knuckleheads and people who go all the way, as I call them, they are fanatics in any walk of life. You might get a nut that comes in there, you know, ready to kill somebody, to put somebody in a headlock or try to take them out altogether. And that, it breeds that type of environment if you're not careful.
Oh, trust me, I know, because that part of North Carolina, Mecklenburg County, where Charlotte, North Carolina is located, it's actually right next door to a very rural county where I grew up. That is called Gaston County. Gaston County is your standard whitewash. Oh my God, they're letting Black people walk the sidewalks now kind of county. We actually used to make the joke when commuting from my job, I would take people from the hip-hop station I worked at in Charlotte, 92.7 FM, and I would take them out into Gaston County. They told me that they knew we crossed into Gaston County because they felt 20 years of civil rights disappear.
Ooh, man, that's deep.
And I hate to say it, they were pretty accurate with that statement. The thing is that county does contain your gun-toting, tobacco-spitting, redneck, big truck rising, no sleeves, and no sunscreen either kind of guys. Just the ones that are most likely, according to new surveys, likely to do mass killings and terroristic assaults on communities of minority. Now, Chris, Charlotte right now is wrestling with how do we deal with this guy? And I want to be honest, as one of my former haunts, as one of my former hometowns, I would like to offer them some advice. Chris, how can Charlotte, North Carolina survive the Trumpocalypse?
You have to have a campaign in PR for anti-Trump, and not say to come out and say we're anti-Trump, but let them know there's an alternative when all this is going down. You got to make sure that people there don't feel that this is going to be just pro-Trump area. Yeah, people, of course, differently said before about walks of life and different ways of thinking. I think that if you have other things as an alternative, that might help for an example.
Yeah, because Charlotte has a lot of examples of bad behavior. Trust me, I know. But they also have a lot of the progress that, when I was growing up, epitomized what we thought was the New South mentality, the non-racist, the rest of the country just doesn't like us because, man, we've got it made in the South. Look at this weather. Look at these trees. Man, everybody loves us Southerners. The New South mentality that wasn't racist in nature and was just embracing of everybody that had the same weird accent. You know what I'm talking about. We thought that Charlotte was going to be the epicenter of that, you know, whereas Savannah, Georgia, and you know, to a degree earlier, thank God they turned their life around, Atlanta, Georgia, whereas those were the two epitome areas of white segregationist behavior, we saw Charlotte as being the unpeeling of all of this Jim Crow nonsense that we had bought into. But now Charlotte is bracing itself for a guy that, just like its neighbor town, could possibly come in and put them on the map for all the wrong racist reasons. Ooh, is it time to buy a storm bunker?
Oh, yes. Yeah, invest wisely. Invest into it right now.
Oh, my God. And I know the thing that really gets me the most about this whole story about, you know, Trump, Charlotte, is I actually know a lot of people in Charlotte voted for Donald Trump, despite one of the guys telling you, might not be a good idea. He has a highway named after him. His name's Billy Graham. You know, he mentioned this many years ago when Donald Trump ran back in 1999. But the thing is that, Chris, we got to wrap up the show. Where can people find you till next week?
Thank you. Go to Facebook.com and type in Chris Bass. C-H-R-I-S-B-A-S-E. Come on board, the water's fine.
Yeah, as for me, you'll find me out with the Mona. Till then, love you, mean it. Get in, bye, we're out.